Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, we're back for another episode of the live show, and we're going to talk about fun stuff today, some great questions, so I'm just going to jump right into it. The first thing, sorry, I had this thing up already. We'll talk about that at the end. The first thing we're going to do is talk about our online rowing school. This is self-promotional. This is like the commercial. You got to sit through this to hear the rest of the show. And I just want to share with you all, we have an online rowing school. I know it sounds super dumb. Like, why would you? You can't learn online. You got to do it. I totally agree. That's why we offer classes. But people call us all the time for classes and we're either full or we don't, you know, they don't want a full 5-day class. They want a 2-day class, but we can't give them a 2-day class. And so this is our best attempt to offer instruction without having to spend a bunch of money coming to us and travel time and time off to just help if you want it to get advanced, more advanced in rowing. And so, and safety. So just quickly, the three things we have is Foundations of Whitewater Rescue. And this is the one I'm going to start growing the most. It's only $25 right now. It's a steal because it's been like slowly building. I'm about to expand it a lot and make it more expensive. So right now it's pretty affordable. And this will exist forever. Like you, if I add stuff and you bought it, you just get it. And just a lot, you can see the curriculum if you go to the pages on whitewatereducation.com. Some of them are free. Hit preview, you get that lesson, you just watch it. It's like more episodes of Gear Garage, basically. But this stuff's generally higher quality production because we spent time and money to produce this stuff. I've hired some people to do some of these. And so it's generally higher quality than Gear Garage is. And, you know, this is just the basics. Knots, some safety, some prevention stuff, throw bags, boat flipping, wraps, 3-to-1 mechanical advantage. This is just some basic stuff so you can like work on stuff that you can do at home instead of, you know, spending a bunch of money taking a class. I recommend taking a rescue class 100%. But again, in lieu of that, if you can't do it, you want a refresher, it's $25. Simple course. We also have Foundations, Basics of Whitewater Rowing, which is part of our bigger class. I'll talk about it in a second. It's just all the stuff through class two. If you just want the basics, you know nothing about rowing, you want some good introduction, safety stuff, what to wear, the equipment, and some basic skills, $95, and it gets you through, you know, just some basics. You're like, you might be going on a Grand Canyon trip and you don't know anything. You want to learn some stuff. Our full course is the Whitewater Rowing course that includes everything in both of those classes and more. This is just our complete course, $395. I know it's a lot of money. We spent a ton of money to do this, to build this. And you'll see it has tons of different classes here. A lot of these are free. Like if you want to do the recognizing hazard one, it's a preview. You can do it. Shooting the V and cutting the C. Every one that says preview here is free. You just use it. A lot of the safety ones I've made free just because I think safety is important. And there's a class 3 section. Every class, like there's class 2, 3, 4, and 5. Which are just skills I think are in that category, has like a reading water section, a river navigation section, a knots and rescue section, usually a safety section. And so there's a bunch of stuff in class 4. There's like flipping, there's more advanced flipping, some really fun stuff here. And you get all of these things for $395. Plus, as I add more to it, you get the new ones. So, and it exists forever, like I said. So I just want to make people aware that it exists. We put a ton of time into it. Every time somebody buys it, I make it better. That's my rule. Like if somebody buys it, I go in there and I update a section. I redo a video and make it more updated or I add a video. So every purchase, it motivates me to just like work on it more and make it even more complete. But it's pretty complete now. So enough of that. That's your commercial. Hopefully you all survive that. And let's get on to questions. The first question is the 16-foot surge setup. Zach, thanks for your deep outreach. I'm not sure what that means, but great. Have a surge 16-foot on order used to rowing Avon bucket boats, 80s, 90s, with the old slant, seat, and pins and clips and all on commercial North Cal rivers. Me too. I started on slant boards and bucket boats, Avons. I mean, I'm a massive advocate for slant boards and Avon Avon boats, especially the 16-foot Pro, which the 16-foot Pro is the base of the 16-foot Surge. I took the Pro, made some adjustments, tweaked it a little bit, and that's where Wing 16-foot Surge came from. Question for the 16-foot Surge boat and a decent camp. Wait, for the 16-foot Surge boat and a decent camp setup for a small group and grad kids, how many bays are really necessary? I'm thinking 4 with cargo, beaver tail, and stern. This is really hard to answer for because I don't know you. I mean, I think I designed this 16-foot Surge for a 4-bay frame. Sit on a cooler, place to put your feet, box in front of you, hatch in the front with table on top. That's how we use them. That's how the Avon 16-foot boats were used in most of my examples. So I think they're designed for 4-bay. You could do 3-bay. If you did 5-bay, they'd have to be pretty small bays because the straight section on the 16-foot Surge is a little short. You know, the straight section on the Pro is actually a little bit longer. Let me actually bring up? Let's go back. Let's go look at the 16-foot Surge on Wing 16-foot Surge. And I just want to, you know, I have a bunch of Wing boats. I like Wings. They make a high quality boat. I'm just this is a photo of the 16 right here. This is the 16 action you see right there. I'm starting to get a little bit frustrated with some of my Wing boats. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm just starting to get a little frustrated with some of the issues I'm coming upon with those boats. So this is the boat. You can see the straight section. You can see my arrow from here to here actually isn't that long. And so what we did though, and the Avon, the Adventure is longer. This section, there's just a little bit of uptick right here. And there's a little bit of uptick right here. Just a tiny bit. And so this is essentially straight section, but it's not perfectly straight. And so we run a frame when we run it from this D-ring to that D-ring pretty comfortably, right? But if your frame goes much longer than that D-ring to that D-ring, it's going to start upturning more and it won't be flat. So I wouldn't recommend running a frame much longer than that distance. I don't know what that distance is. It's not marked exactly on here, but that's why I don't think you can do much more than a 4-bay frame on the boat. And everybody, I wish, you know, I hear a lot of people trying to find frames for these. And I think Rogue Gearworks is making a lot of frames for these. I got mine from Downriver Equipment, the one that we had designed. I love, hopefully after NRS bought Downriver Equipment, they keep the Downriver frames because those frames, boxes, setups are really sweet. Hopefully NRS doesn't just, you know, get rid of their frames and force NRS frames on Downriver Equipment. So I love this personally, this design, the dimensions here. Like I designed it, so of course I like it. But like the dimensions, the length to width ratio, the 4 thwarts. And the one thing to know, if you get the thwarts, like the 2 center thwarts are the same. The end thwarts you can see are shorter and slanted to fit in that. Like I brought in the boat a little early. The downside is the thwarts are a little weird. Yeah, you have to remember which thwart goes where. For sure. But like we use this boat on Illinois trips as paddle boats at high water, gear boats at all levels. We use it as a paddle boat on the Rogue. We use it as a gear boat on the Rogue. We use it on the Oahe at low water. This is just a solid workhorse of a boat. All right. So back to hopefully answer that question. So we run 4 bays, like I said, and then a cargo beaver in the stern. Yeah. And like I don't run a cargo beaver unless I need to. Like if I have a metal groover, yeah. If I have ammo cans, yeah. But if it's just like a plastic subway groover or bags, I'm not gonna add the beaver. It's just like people, it's nice to have things off your floor to protect the floor and also a little bit for low water, but honestly, it's just more weight. It's just one more thing. And so I just the low water, I personally just go right to the floor with stuff. If it's again, if it's bags and plastic stuff, if it's stuff like it's metal, I definitely want that elevated off the floor. All right, cool. Question, are double rail setups a good advantage to secure smaller top boxes, bags, etc.? I guess. I run single rail downriver frames on these. It saves weight. It's just one bar. Like the second bar is like cool. It costs more for the second bar. Some people put diamond plating on top of the double rail to walk on, whatever. We have really just simple frames because we carry the frames a lot. We load them on the boats. We have to run the Illinois at low water sometimes. We want the lightest thing possible. As soon as you add a double rail, like it just makes it heavier. Our Rogue gearboats, we're double railing it. And I think there's, you know, maybe some advantages of double rail. We don't put many boxes on the double rail. I guess we do sometimes. Yeah, we do. We tie some small Pelican boxes, sometimes the pump on the double rail. But not much, honestly. So if it depends what you're doing. If you're doing like hard rivers, low water, I'd go single rail. If you're just doing the Rogue and like the San Juan and class two desert rivers, do whatever you want. Like double rail is probably kind of nice. Kind of depends what you're doing. So hopefully that answers your question. I don't think you need a double rail, but it's nice to have. You know, I don't think you need diamond plating on top of your double rails. Nice to have. I don't think you need a beaver tail. Sure, nice to have. It's just more expense, more weight, more stuff to carry before and after your trip. So I'm somewhat of a minimalist on a lot of this stuff. But yeah, it's a kind of deal. But enjoy them. But the quality of these wing boats, they're beautiful. But they're hopefully you don't have something where you're like, oh, I wish they did this better because it's an interesting dilemma. When you get your wing boat, you spend a lot of money on it and you want it to be perfect. And hopefully it is. All right, getting back in rough. By the way, I haven't read the questions this week, so I have no idea what we're getting into. And this is long. Hi, Zach. How are you? I'm great. Thank you. I'm doing really well. Yep. Been very busy teaching courses. Sorry for reaching out via direct message. Oh, I got this one on Instagram. Got it. I don't know which one this is. I did read this one. But I want to ask you for your thoughts on this device option for getting back into the raft. So first of all, if you guys message me through Instagram, I don't check messages very often. So it could be weeks before I get back to you or never. The best place to submit a question is through Whitewater Guidebook. I mentioned this before. I'm just going to mention it again, bring this up. Whitewater Guidebook is a website that we manage. Let's get to it. Here's like a middle fork flow page I kind of keep as a reference. And I have a lot of cool pages on this page. And then we also post all of the shows here. So you could watch it or listen to it here. Every show has the podcast, the video, and then just a AI summary with links. So it's where we post it. But also under Gear Garage here, you can ask a question. And this is the best way to ask me a question because it just helps our workflow. We get it quickly. If you send it to me any other way, I get questions through all kinds of channels. I don't check those channels very often, and I may never respond. So just FYI, that's the best way. We appreciate it to ask through the Whitewater Guidebook. Anyway, I'm a guy from the Futaleufú, Chile. I've been working there for 13 years. Yeah, a badass. Like if you've been there 13 years, you're definitely badass. I've also done seasons in the U.S. and Canada. I'm an IRA, I-R-I-A. I don't know what that is. Rafting and rescue instructor. I watch a lot of your videos and really value your perspective. Think you communicate very clear. Thank you. Cool. So you want advice on my opinion on this device. From my point of view, I think it can make sense on class 1-2 rivers, especially for family trips or more recreational users who are just down on the river for fun. But above class 3, I believe guides should be able to re-enter the raft without relying on a device that could introduce additional risk. In particular, I see a potential entrapment hazard with this kind of setup. Let me pull up the video. I have seen this video, and I didn't read your whole comment top start to finish, so I didn't know what you were going to say, but I agree. I think it's these devices are interesting for class 1 and 2, and potentially dangerous. Let me see if I can pull this video up. Potentially dangerous on anything harder. So here, this going. Here's the video. So this is a fat cat or an airboat? I think it's a fat cat. These little boats are hard to get into, honestly. They they weren't designed to make it easy to get into them. Climbing over the upside down, one of these things like to flip, and climbing into them upside down is difficult to do. Just to preface that. So it flips and then deploys this, that yellow thing right there is called a, I think it's a rapid rung ladder to get back into the boat. Right. Cool. Got self-rescue. Self-rescue is super important. So here it is to start upside down boat using the ladder to get into the upside down boat, which again is tricky. I think he used a ladder there. Yeah, he used the ladder there. Flipped the boat, got over, deployed the ladder to get back in. So I've talked about this a bunch in the past, and I personally think that self-rescue is important. I think being able to get back in the boat is really important. And I think a lot of people underestimate how important it is to be able to self-rescue and get back into a boat. A lot of people who are boaters cannot get back into their boat. It's a fitness thing. I mean, I'm getting older. It's getting harder for me. It's an age thing. And if you can't get back into your own boat, you need to be with somebody who can pull you into their boat, maintain proper boat spacing, and pull you back into their boat to get you back into your boat. You just need to. Like, I'm getting to the point where it's getting harder to get back into a boat. In 10 years, I won't be able to do it. I will only boat if I have a guardian angel around with me in 10 years when I can't get back into a boat. I see a lot of people out there on the river who can't get back into the boats, and that I can just tell I can't. I can look at them and tell it. To me, that's a problem. Unless you're on class one and maybe two, and then you can float, swim to shore, you can like hitch a ride back. I don't know. But like, you need to not just grab your boat. That's not enough. Just grabbing your boat isn't enough. You need to get back in your boat, right? And if it flips, you can't get back in your boat. Hopefully somebody's there to get you immediately. That's why I'm so fanatical about boat spacing. Anyway, back to the question. The commenter said, from my point of view, I think it can make sense on class one to two rivers, especially for family trips or more recreational users who are just on the river for fun. I'm going to go further than that and say, from my point of view, I think this can make sense on class one rivers, right? Or maybe the flat spots on class two rivers between the rapids. But in any sort of current, this is definitely an entanglement hazard. Definitely in my mind. Like, it's important to get back in your boat, 100%. But if you put a leg in this, this is just an entrapment. And you're in current, you could get entrapped in this ladder, somehow like upside down entering a rapid, and it could lead to a fatality. So if you're using it out of convenience, you're trading convenience for potentially dying. Nobody's died in a ladder that I know of, right? There's different ladders. This one, there's like this downstream ladder. I think that's called. That's like a little metal thing that pops down. There's a bunch of ladders because people like ladders. And I think if you're like in a lake in class one and you're using it there, great. But the temptation will be in moving current in class two plus, in class three, to start using it. And I think that's a problem. I think that's personally a serious problem. And I can tell by this comment, the person asking me this does agree. So, and I would completely agree that above class three, I believe guides should be able to re-enter the raft without relying on a device that can introduce additional risk. 100%. Above, even in class three, a guide or a boater should be able to re-enter the raft without relying on a device that could introduce additional risk. I completely agree. And there are solutions. You could clip your flip line in, throw it over the boat, swim around it, and pull yourself up the flip line. I think that is a solution. And there are some other solutions out there to getting back in the boat. There's a thing called the paddle elevator, where this is hard to explain, but if you have a perimeter line, put your paddle in the perimeter line, handle up, pull it down. It's going to move, the leverage is going to make your perimeter line move and stand on the paddle, use that technique. But these ladders, in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure it sounds like the opinion of the person who sent this comment, I think are a potential massive hazard. And although I think they maybe are intended for class one and easy class two, my concern is that people will start using them in places they shouldn't be using them. And the temptation will be, well, I'll just do this one time in class three. I'll just use this one time in class four. And then they do, it works. And then it becomes a habit. And then them and all their friends are doing it and somebody's going to die. And so I'm going to agree with what the commenter's point is. Hopefully I'm making my point too. Other options like strap across the raft might be usable as long as they don't create safety issues. But this specific device to me seems like it could pose a real risk. I totally agree. So personally, I would limit its use to recreational contexts. I mean, boating is recreational. I would say I would limit it to flat water. Like if you're on the, you know, like there's a lot of class two rivers in Utah. You're floating some, you know, thing where it's like flat for a mile and you want to jump out and swim and climb back in. Awesome. But anywhere where you might flip, that's too difficult for me to use this. For guides, especially, I would limit it in, I wouldn't recommend it for guides, especially not on class three higher, where the margin of error is much smaller. Yeah, for sure. 100%. I mean, river guides, there's private boaters. I think private boaters should be able to get back into their boat or have a plan to get back in their boat. There's other plans. Have a boater, have a guardian angel near you, throw a rope over, pull yourself in. I don't know what the plan is, but have a plan. But river guides, in my opinion, should definitely be able to get back in their boat. And if they can't do it without a device, they need to have a flip line or something that's a device to get them back in the boat that's not a ladder. I think what you're getting at, no river guide should be using a ladder like this. This is not like a smart thing for a river guide to need. If you need a ladder to get back in your boat as a river guide, I'm going to say you probably shouldn't be guiding anything harder than class two, maybe easy class three. Cool. All right. Hopefully that's that question. I'm sure I made people mad there. I guarantee people who sell ladders are mad at me. I guarantee private boaters who use them are like, no, Zach's an idiot. Cool. Like this is my opinion. That's what I do on the show. I share my thoughts, my opinion, my largely unpopular opinions, but at least the gentleman who sent me this comment agrees with me. So I at least have one person who's not mad at me for having that unpopular opinion. All right, moving on. Imagine you were out paddling one day and stop in an eddy below class five rapid to chill for a few minutes. You watch the six boaters listed below run the rapid. They all run the rapid flawlessly. Rank them by cool factor. I've had this conversation on the show many times. Many, many, many times. I love this conversation. Thank you for this question. Let's first start with who I think is cool, just straight up without the class five rapid part. Number one, kayaker in a playboat. Number two, catarafter. Number three, whitewater canoer. Number four, inner tuber. Number five, R1er. Number six, catarafter. That's probably how, just purely on like my opinion of the cool factor of boating. I mean, I'd probably put R1 a little higher. Let's go kayaker in a playboat, catarafter. R1 and whitewater canoe are going to be tied. Inner tubers are rad. Like inner tubers are cooler, but I'm not that. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you're inner tuber. Just trying to be a dork. And the creature crafter is like at the very bottom. Like, yeah. And that creature crafter is like just below pack rafter. Now, if it's a pack rafter who hiked in to do the run, I'll move them higher. But if it's a pack rafter who drove to the put in and like went down a boat ramp, like they're barely a notch above creature crafter, in my opinion. And then there's inflatable kayaker, which I would probably put in the whitewater canoer R1 or tie range. Like duckiers to me are like R1 whitewater canoer level in that tier. Okay. But the question isn't that. The question is they're below a class five rapid. So I'm going to say number one's inner tuber. I've been with inner tubers on class five runs. My friend inner tube Cherry Creek, I was there a couple times to watch that. It's so awesome. And I've seen him eddy out below class five rapids. I took his inner tube down some of the class four rapids on the creek. That was hard enough, like super impressive. So number one, if it's a below class five rapid, who I think is cool, inner tuber, and then probably whitewater canoer, because that is badass. I mean, that is no joke difficult. to get a whitewater canoe down a class five. So yeah, that would be next. Then kayaking and playboat, because I don't know, playboating is just cool. Like I just, that's cool. And then I'd probably say Catarafter. And then R1ers. I've seen some R1ers do some ridiculous stuff. R1ers can, I don't dislike them. I'm not saying they're not cool. I just, they do very impressive stuff. But if I see R1er at the bottom of class five, I'm like, eh, that's what you guys do. Like that's just an average Tuesday for an R1er. So I'm not that impressed. And then Creature Crafter, I could care less if a Creature Crafter fell down a class five. Like I would, I've rarely seen a video of a Creature Crafter going to class five where I'm like, that was impressive. Like literally they just held on and they're alive at the bottom. So like zero. I mean, I did a Creature Craft. It was fun. I would do it again. I'm not a hater. I'm not impressed at all. So hopefully that answered. Thanks for the question. I love these questions. And I guarantee like the last one, I made somebody mad. There's some pack rafter out there that's going to stop watching the show. I'm going to get a thumbs downer from, you know, some inner tuber. All the Creature Crafters are going to hate mail me. Like, I get it. But I do enjoy sharing my opinion on this. This is my opinion. This is what I'm just telling you guys what I think. I'm a shallow person. I'm insecure. This is just my shallowness coming out. I can pretend to be better than this, but I'm not going to because I love this question. Okay, next question. Rigging a trailer truck best practices. Love the show. Thank you for doing the work to make this show happen. Thank you very much. I appreciate the nice comment. So many nice comments. Thank you. And especially after I say so many dumb things that piss people off, I do appreciate the nice opening sentences. In your last show, you mentioned how you can crack an oil shaft when it's rigged on a truck in transit. It got me wondering about the best practices for rigging a trailer with the raft for a long drive. How concerned do you get with cam straps, rubber mounted rubber? Not at all. I do not think about it at all. Do you keep the pack cooler on the raft or in your climate controlled car? Is the pack cooler the food? I put the cooler. I mean, there's not room in my climate controlled car for a cooler. So it just goes in the back of the truck. I'll put like a pad or something on top and maybe like what's that called? It's like a bag you put stuff in that can get wet. I'll put like a canvas bag or something that's wet on top maybe to help with the vapor of cooling. Maybe cover them on a long drive just to help keep the ice. But I'll just throw the back of the truck. I won't put the cooler in the raft because it makes the raft heavy to load and unload. Now, those of you that have trailers with little wheels in the back and a little pulley thing, cool. Leave your cooler in there. But like I don't like wheelie things in the back of the trailer because I've seen people step on them and fall down and get hurt. So I don't own trailers with wheelie things in the back, except for a sweep trailer, but that's a different story. Okay. When you go over a mountain pass, are you getting out to let out air? Yes, 100%. Depends on the elevation gain, but anything over like a couple thousand feet, definitely stop because the air inside the boat will expand. It'll tear D-rings. It'll pop stuff. It's hard on the boats. Definitely letting out air. I go up over a pass. At the pass, you air back after the pass. Do you add air back in the tubes? No, because it just takes a long time. It just tightens the straps down more. If you let a lot of air out and it's jiggly, you could. I've just never done it because it would take a long time. And I don't know. I'll just make the straps tighter. I'm curious to see how other people do it. I'm sure I can learn. If anybody has comments, by the way, nobody's commented yet. Leave me a comment just so I know you're out there, everyone. But if anybody has comments, please add a comment there. There's a new feature that just showed up where I can show the comments on the stage. So I really want to test it. So if you're watching and have a minute to comment, please do. I feel like comments might be broken right now because nobody's commenting. Okay, counterweight to oars. Oh man, I can already tell you. I'm gonna answer this without reading it, and I'll read it, and it's probably the answer. Counterweighted oars. Okay, Courtney, there you are. Look, does it show up? Wait, it shows up there, but does it show up here? Oh, look, there's this new thing that has. Hi, Zach. Okay, cool. Comments work. You guys just aren't into what I'm saying today. You're not commenting. I get it. This is probably one of my worst shows I've ever done. Totally get it. You don't have to comment, but thank you, Anton, for the comment. See, it shows up in the bottom right, which is kind of cool. It's a new feature. Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to tell you. Counterweighted oars. My opinions. There are some of you who can't hold the oars in your hand and row because they're too heavy. That's a bummer. I'm really sorry you can't hold the oars in your hand. I'm going to say in the nicest way possible, that's going to offend a lot of you. I'm going to say it anyway. Start working out. Get some barbells. Go to the gym. If you row boats and you can't hold your oars because they're too heavy, oars nowadays are very light. I started with big, thick, solid ash oars when I was guiding in my 20s. Like now there's just these lightweight, even the heaviest Sawyer oar is lighter than what we used to use, right? Like instead of getting counterbalanced oars, do some exercise and just get stronger. I'm saying this with love. And I know I've already known I've offended so many people, but half the show is offending people. So I'm kind of like, I'm already at that point, right? Like I'm already made a lot of people mad. So that's what I'm gonna say. If you don't want to work out and you still want to row rafts, get your counterbalanced oars. Do that. I'm just going to say, if you need counterbalanced oars, you probably can't get back in your boat either. Like whitewater boating is a physical sport. It's physical. Like if you're not physically fit, you're putting yourself in a dangerous river, right? You're putting yourself in a very dangerous place. Rivers are dangerous. And so fitness is the way we self-rescue, the way we get down the river. If you need counterbalanced oars to just actually row, I personally think that's a little bit of a problem. But again, I'm giving you my warning. I'm giving you my thoughts. The other downsides of the downsides of counterbalanced oars are one, they sink. And so it's a bummer when you're losing oar and it sinks. It's kind of an expensive thing. It's not fun to have your oars sink. You want oars to float, right? That seems like a good thing to me. So sinking oars seems like a bad thing. And two, over the course of the day, you are accelerating and decelerating all the time. Every time you're accelerating and decelerating mass, which in my rudimentary understanding of physics, it takes a lot more energy to accelerate and decelerate this extra mass than it does just to row the boat. So I understand you have to keep the oars down. You know, they're so heavy, I can't push them down. But you are also putting out way more energy over the course of the day. It's way more energy to be moving these masses around in the handles. So I'm not a fan of counterweighted oars at all. And that people take our rowing schools and say, oh, I wish you had counterbalanced oars for us to rent. Like, we're not going to rent you counterbalanced oars because they're going to sink. I can't afford to have a bunch of oars sink, right? And I can't afford to be swapping. I can only have so much equipment. So I'm not going to have them in our rowing schools. I'm not going to teach people to use them. Now, if you want to disregard everything I think about them and use them, awesome. You have a reason. One other thing you can do to help is not run your oars out here. Run your oars in a normal spot. So I see people counterbalanced oars, but they're out like this, right? This is a wide push-up. It's really hard to get power in a wide push-up. You want to be doing a regular push-up when you're rowing. You want to be like right here, which means when they come down, they almost touch, or they do touch, or they overlap. Run overlapping oars, right? Put more mass to the inside. Like, develop good oar management and run overlapping, which is very powerful if you're an overlapping. But a lot of the people with counterbalance are out here. So what happens, this is the progression. They buy a raft. They want to sit on a box. Then they put a mount on top of the box. They put a seat on top of the box. So they're sitting like a foot above the frame. Well, to deal with that, they buy 10-inch oar towers to be higher. Well, the 10-inch oar towers splay out more. And then whoever they buy the raft from is like, oh, you have a 14-foot raft. You need 9.5-foot oars, according to our oar chart that we came up with, right? Sort of like in Armageddon when they had like the depth drill chart and the captain was like, you're not meeting your depth. And then Bruce Willis was like, I will meet that depth. Like, it's because the captain was using the oar chart for how much they had to drill before they blew up the nukes. Anyway, total side story. Back to this. So you're buying your oars, and the guy's like, oh, you have a 14-foot boat. You use 9.5-foot oars. Well, because you sit up so high up and your oar towers are just splayed out, and the person told you already the wrong thing, your oars are a foot and a half too short. And so you have to be all the way out here. And then they're like, oh, it's so hard. Then you put counterbalances in them. What I'm going to say is, like, sit low, get rid of your seat if you need to. Just sit low. Don't use anything lower than 8-inch oar towers. Use the oar formula to get oars. Get the right length oars to begin with. and then think about maybe overlapping them, and then maybe do some push-ups. Okay, let's read the question. I'm on a rant now. Okay, what are your thoughts on counterweight overs? I think I got that done. Is it worth buying weights to add to my current overs? No. Obviously, it is better to buy the overs with the weights built in. When is it worth considering going with counterweight overs? Never. Unless you want to disregard everything I just said. Okay, oh, got lots of questions. Cool, thanks for all the comments. I know the comments work. Hot take. Yeah, it's a hot take. This is a hot take show. I'm going to rename this hot take. Counterweighted oars are a good way to send your oars straight. They sink. I don't know. If you want oars that sink, I mean, I've had a friend just tape rocks on. You just duct tape a rock onto it. That's another great way. It's a free way to make your oar sink to the bottom of the river. Counterweighted oars. I think the hate comes from heavy counterbalances, 4 pounds on cataract oars. I really like the Gilman grip counterbalance. It's only 2 pounds and not too heavy. Yeah, I mean, the only thing better than a 4 pound counterbalance is a 2 pound counterbalance. The only thing about a 2 pound counterbalance is no counterbalance. They help on long days when you have it to row nonstop for fishing or something. I strap my oars into counteract the oars sinking. I would say class 1 to 3 counterbalance. Okay. Before, yeah, I could kind of see that. I mean, I row long days all the time. All of my river guides row long days all the time. Nobody has counterbalance oars. You will find zero. I'm not going to say zero. You're going to find 1 out of 500 river guides with counterbalanced oars. I would say zero, but I know a guy who, when we had the solid ash oars, the really heavy oars that are like 4 times the weight of modern oars, a guy who I worked with in his 50s couldn't handle them. He counterbalanced by duct taping a rock to them. That's the only time I've ever seen a commercial guide counterbalance oars. You will not find commercial guides with counterbalanced oars. We all row long days. We're fine. I know you can do it too. It just, like I said, might mean some push-ups or some whatever that muscle is. Maybe some tricep-y things, maybe some dips or some pull-ups, maybe all of those things. I don't know. Just a suggestion. Okay, cool. All right, back to North Umpqua local saying 100. So at least I haven't pissed this person off, but I do know because I've had this conversation with many people. And I see them offended when I talk to them in person. So I know you're out there offended, and I'm sorry. Please don't unsubscribe. My ego will – that's a way to hurt my ego. So if you want to hurt my ego, unsubscribe. But help me. I need to grow my ego a little bit. So maybe subscribe instead. Okay, moving on. A lot of questions. Supporting Gear Garage. Oh, I like this one. I would love to support your entertaining and very educational site. What is the difference between becoming a Patreon supporter and YouTube Gear Garage membership? So Patreon is this thing I have. You just pledge a few bucks a month if you want. I used to put special Patreon-only content up, but I just don't have time to do that much. But I should do that more. But you don't get much out of it. Patreon's a way just to, like, if you're already on Patreon, to send a few bucks. Because I have a job, so, like, I don't need the money. But I do use that money to buy equipment that I break for the show. So, like, don't feel like you have to support me because I have a job. But if you do want to support the show, what you're doing is allowing me to go out and buy more stuff to test and talk about. And so, and also, I guess, like, today it's a long show. I don't feel as guilty as not being, leaving my job right now to work. But I use all the money I get from the stuff to, like, buy things for the show, like new cameras or drones or whatever to get better footage. So thank you for asking. The YouTube membership is probably better because I do put more member only content up there. That's the place I put member. So you'll see videos. A great example is, like, I go out in the field and something happens that I want to share, but I really can't make it public because it's either, something dangerous happens, something sketchy happens, something where somebody's not proud of it happened. And if I say, can I put this on YouTube? They're like, I'd rather you didn't. Like, what if I just do it to, like, the 100 members, 200 members? Like, yeah, no, that's cool. It's not public. Like, your employer's not going to see it. Your family's not going to see it. People are like, yeah, no, that's fine. So I tend to put, if you look back, there's some really cool member content from, like, incidents on the river that I could throw up there. We just had a really cool, it was an unfortunate evacuation, but a really well done evacuation. And I'm trying to decide if I want to talk about it on the show or maybe make it a member show. And sometimes I've done Gear Garage live, member live shows before too. I haven't done it much lately, but the benefit of the YouTube thing is there's you get extra content. And Patreon could work that way. I just don't take the time to move the content to Patreon. It's just one more step, and sometimes I get busy. But thanks for asking. That's a really very generous question. The other thing you could do, I mentioned this earlier. Let's get out of here. Is that's not the right place. I can do it here. Is buy our rowing school stuff, like buy our online rowing school. It's a lot of money. It's either you know instead of like a $2 a month. Oh yeah, I can make this work. Whitewater, instead of like $2 a month or $5 a month, you know, spend $25 and get the basics of or foundations of Whitewater Rescue. And so you're getting something out of it. You're getting like all these extra, basically these are just a bunch more shows, but with a little bit better production quality and like way more thought that goes into them than just a regular Gear Garage. So you're getting, you know, this. And then again, as I add more, you'll get more stuff. So this is an easy way to support the show, is just buy one of our online courses or get yourself some equipment. We have this website, River Hardware, you know, buy yourself this is stuff that we use all the time and we know is better, right? Like these throw bags are made in Hungary. I import them. You really can't buy these in the US. A throw bag like this. This is a modern throw bag. Get yourself a really good throw bag. And we make a little bit of money off that. You get a throw bag. It's win-win. Like if you want to support the show, we have what I think is just like the best river gear. This is all kind of expensive stuff. It's high quality. But, you know, get yourself some carabiners, these are high quality pulleys, some webbing if you don't have it. So if you want to support the show, you know, we make a little bit of money off this stuff. And so that's another way to do it. Without just giving us money, you can like buy something. Certainly appreciate that. So that's an idea too. Okay. So back to this. Thanks for the question. It gave me a chance to promote what we're doing. I think that's it. So let's go back. And if I haven't offended too many of you, and I still have some of you watching, I want to talk about some entrapment rescue techniques, because I just spent a few days teaching a rescue class. And yesterday we did entrapments, and I got some video. I'm super excited to share of a couple of techniques that I like. Oh, here we go. It was my question about the countermouse oars. My sister used to guide, bought some, and I was jealous how easy they were. I feel better being lazy, not being more serious about buying them now. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I asked my opinion, and hopefully my opinion is correct. If anybody has a different opinion, it's like, no, like throw in the comments, right? Just out here. Jay, by the way, Jay is an absolute badass. Jay, I hope we're going to be able to compete. I think I'm going to Clackfest, so hopefully we get to compete again together. I'm going to listen to what Jay says here. Another con on counterbalance oars is the mass that hits you in the face when you catch your downstream oar. You take out two teeth instead of one. Yeah. I mean, I was talking this morning to our attorney working on our release forms. We were talking about hazards on the river, and we're specifically our release forms for our rowing schools. And I said, probably the most dangerous thing in a rowing schools is somebody taking an oar to the face or the chest. And the oars are probably the biggest hazard of whitewater rowing. And so by adding counterbalance in there, you're just making them harder hit you. It's just more hazardous. So lots of cons. Jay, thank you for piping in, because that's a very astute observation. Okay. Whew, seems I didn't offend everybody. Thank you, Jay, for not being offended. So anyway, I want to talk about entrapment and rescue a little bit. And let's see, here we go. Here's the video. There we go. So, you know, I think when I think about hazards on the river, things that can happen, there's two things that are my biggest concerns: foot entrapments and wood. And the reason why is because if those things happen, there's not a really clean way to plan for those ahead of time or provide rescues. And so if I'm giving a pre-trip safety talk to anybody, whether it's commercial or people I'm boating with, I'm really focusing on preventing. I'm focused on avoiding these things. I want to avoid wood, and I want to avoid foot entrapments. I avoid wood by portaging it, steering way clear of it, by letting people know who I'm with. If we see wood, we're going to go the opposite way. And if you're swimming above it, I want you to swim away from it. If you're facing wood, turn 90 degrees and swim away from it aggressively, right? foot entrapments, the way we avoid foot entrapments, we try to avoid them, is just tell people, if you swim, keep your feet up, right? So that's how we avoid foot entrapments. Body entrapments are just your body getting pinned somewhere, which is, there's no good rule for it, except maybe don't run rivers beyond your capability where you might fall out and get pinned. But having a foot or body entrapment is certainly a possibility. And one of the issues with these entrapments is that there's not many rescue techniques that are super effective. It's just, it's not like a wrap where you just like, oh, let's just do a 3-to-1 and pull it off. Or, you know, somebody's swimming, you throw a throw bag or go get them at the raft. Or what if somebody's stuck on a rock, you just like tell them to swim to shore. There's not like, we have tools for most things that happen on the river. We don't have good tools for entrapments, but there's a couple, and I just want to share them with you. One, if this was an actual situation right here, if you have the experience and skill and practice, just walk out there and grab them, right? Like shallow water cross, just if you have the ability and the training to walk in shallow water, just grab them, get their head above water. I think a lot of entrapments are just go get them, or just take a ducky down, take a boat down, get yourself there, pull them out, right? Get on them. But if it's somewhere where you can't get a boat to them, you can't walk to them, you don't know the solution, ropes are an option. Like using throw bags are an option. And if you take a rescue class, you may have learned all these techniques, you know, like a stabilization line and another line and all these rope techniques. But as whitewater people, it's not realistic for us to get ropes across the river on most rivers. It's just, it would take forever. You need people on both sides. You need people that can throw ropes across the river. You need tons of ropes. So like if somebody's pinned face down, by the time you set up a 2-bank rescue, they're dead, right? After 3 to 5 minutes of head underwater, permanent brain damage, 10 minutes, you're dead. Like, I don't know anybody who can set up a rope across the river in 10 minutes. I mean, it depends on the river, but it's, you know, it's hard to do. So what I would suggest is learning some one bank rescues, some ways to use ropes from the side you're on to hopefully get ropes on people and get them out. This is one of them. This is a pretty commonly taught one where you attach 2 throw bags together with a carabiner and you work together with some coils of rope to throw them over the person. And then if you miss, you just sort of like whoop-dee-doo, there you go. And it's nice if you can get the bags under the body. If it's just a rope, it's just like a rope. The bags are just a tiny bit more support. And so, you know, it's not critical you get the bags. It's just kind of nice. You know, the carabiner's there. And then you walk upstream a little bit. Maybe you're already upstream. And you pull them off. And a lot of people who teach rescue will teach the person downstream will walk under the upstream person and create a cinch and pull them off the cinch. And that's a technique for sure. But, you know, when time is of the essence to pull them off, I don't think you need to do that. Just get upstream and pull. And that's exactly what happened here. Right. And then the person came free. This is it in action. And so, you know, again, you have, if somebody's head is underwater 3 to 5 minutes before permanent brain damage, right? Well, you had to see them. You had to get to shore. You had to tie 2 throw bags together. Then you had to get it over there. And hopefully that line gets to them in that time frame to get them off. And in this case, it did. This is worth practicing. And as you can see, it worked. I mean, it's just Scuba Steve stuck on a rock. Here's another really cool technique. This requires 3 people, but that first technique is hard sometimes, you know, like it's hard to be super throw a far. It takes a lot of teamwork to like throw it at the same time. If you've never practiced it with that person, the odds of you getting it are super low. Like this is teamwork heavy. But like with 2 people, this is a technique you can deploy quickly from 1 bank and then pull them off. The other technique is going to be a little bit more effective. If you have 3 people, you have 1 rope downstream, 1 rope upstream, people holding them. And then the person with the 2 bags takes 1 throw just to get it past them. So here you had to together throw the loop over the person. Here, what all that really has to happen is that the person in the middle, the red there, just has to throw the bags past them and get it past them. You can see he's going to do it. Again, there's somebody upstream, somebody downstream, letting that rope. You throw it past him. And then the person downstream walks upstream while the person throwing is the greeter. The person throwing will run down to the river and be ready to grab the person. Right? That'll be a greeter. They go, pulling the rope. It's better right now. What they're doing is trying to get the throw bag at the chest. It's just a little bit. If you can do that, great. You know, not come upstream, pulled off. We all took turns being the victim. It works surprisingly well, honestly. Like you learn a lot by throwing the rope, but you learn more by being the victim here and just feeling it kind of like get around your waist, get around your chest, and feel the upstream pull and pull you off. And you can see the thrower does the meet and greet. Quick and easy, super cool method. So I just want to share those things with you all. I think that I'd like to do more videos with just some like opinions that I have about techniques for rescue. This is the one that I've used for a long time in teaching. And then yesterday I was teaching with Mark, and Mark showed me this one before, but he had us do this one too. And I'm like, oh yeah, that one's super sweet as well. And so I just want to share these with you all. Love to get your thoughts. Whether you put a comment in the comment section right now or like go to Whitewater Guidebook and say, hey, that was cool, or no, you should do this instead. That's how I learn. Like I learned from Mark a lot. I learned from practicing this stuff. I also learned from conversations. There's no like 100% right answer. In the rescue community, I think like 20 different things are being taught right now. This is just the one I like based on my training, my experience. But if you have something you think is way cooler, shoot me a note, because I'm always trying to improve. So think that's it for this episode. Thank you all for how long has this been? Another 31 minutes, 52 minutes of me making a fool out of myself by offending some of you. If I offended you, you're probably already hung up and you're done. But if you made it this far and I haven't offended you, please subscribe. I am on a mission to boost my ego, and I boost my ego with subscribers. So just it costs you nothing. Literally, you press that button. It's nothing. Just hit subscribe. It's not, I'm not going to advertise to you through it. It doesn't hurt. It's just literally a vanity metric to make me feel, to give me more vanity in myself. And I need it, guys. I'm super insecure. So like, you know, give me a little bit. It'll make me feel 1% less insecure for every one of you that hits the subscribe button. And then if you want to go a step above, hit the like button. Why not? That'll just tell Google this wasn't as terrible as I think it was, this show. But thanks for watching, and we'll see you all probably. I'm around a lot right now. Like, courses are over for a bit for me, so I'll probably get back on the Tuesday schedule. As long as there's questions, we'll keep doing this silly show. All right. Bye, everyone.